Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Grandling.
I'm Jenny Prentice.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And a week ago, we rolled out our rule change suggestions. And in the spirit of the season, with Christmas right around the corner here, and a very Merry Christmas to anyone who celebrates it, but we decided to give back to our audience for once, to actually show some love and respect to those who listen to our show. And we are going to share some of the rule change suggestions that came in, and some of them we will berate the listener. I mean, let's be honest with that. And some of them we will praise them, and I don't know, fold these rules into our imaginary football league.
I mean, that really truly is the gift, to be able to be berated by us. So it's Merry Christmas to all of you.
That's it. It'll be some Santa moments, it'll be some Krampus moments, and it'll all come together beautifully here.
Krampus is getting big, by the way.
Like, yeah, is it how do you say it, by the way?
Krampus?
Krampus?
I thought it was
Krampus. That sounds terrible though.
Yeah, Krampus sounds more like a pain. But yeah, I've heard now of I've had a confirmed existence of a Krampus party, and people were wearing like Christmas sweaters smeared in like fake blood.
So I just Googled this. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, Krampus is like bad German Santa, right?
Yeah, he's kind of like demon-y, is my impression.
He takes the toys away.
Half man, half goat? Is that also accurate?
Yeah, seems like it.
Okay.
And he, I mean, I don't like the violence of it. I do like the thought of, I think he puts the kids in, like, looks like a clothes hamper type of thing in some illustrations.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, just sort of taunts them and whatnot. And sure, it's all in good fun.
Well, we did this pod just so I could be educated about this strange phenomenon.
Jenny will now be afraid of Krampus for the rest of her days.
So we will see who gets a Santa and who gets a Krampus here as we go along. And we are starting here. G-Rain writes in to us, and he had two rule suggestions. And this first one, I mean, it's going to be polarizing right off the bat here. G-Rain writes, "The first rule I would change is adopting the college rule of the game clock stopping after a team gains a first down." I'm going to open this one up to the floor.
I have strong opinions against this. No disrespect, because we appreciate all of the feedback. And maybe it's potentially because I've been watching so much NFL. So whenever, you know, over the last 10 years or whatever, whenever I watch college, it's jarring. But I like the fact that 2-minute warnings or 2-minute drives are hard, because you have to worry about the clock. It's this additional factor that makes it more challenging, more difficult. It affects the play selection. I think you would lose a lot of drama if you changed it. And also, we have all of these stats about successful 2-minute drives and, you know, quarterbacks who've led their teams back from deficits. And if you add the stoppage of the game clock for a first down, then those feats become easier and you sort of change the meaning of some of that history.
I'm going to say no as well, G-Rain, because I have shit to do. You know, I can't be watching 5-hour games, plain and simple. Like, you know, the beauty of it is that when, you know, under 2-minute warning, it's basically a rolling clock, you know. And so I dig that. If you don't have timeouts, then that's on you. And to Jenny's point, kind of connecting it to something that relates to common sense, I think there is an art to timeout preservation. I remember being at a Patriots game once and actually talking to Jenny about this, saying it is just unbelievable to me, for example, that Bill Belichick always has 3 timeouts in the exact moment that he needs 3 timeouts. And there is just an element of preparation there that I think coaches do in the days leading up to the games that make these 2-minute drives seamless, and that you don't need all these clock stoppages. So I think it actually rewards bad coaching. So, for example, Urban Meyer, it would reward him.
Also making the college to pro transition easier, but we're already past that, so.
Urban Meyer would be 9-3 with this rule in place.
That was the only difference, honestly. I mean, just a slight between success and, you know, what's the word? Unprecedented failure?
Yeah.
This is not an Urban Meyer podcast, sorry.
Yeah, it's not. It is not. I'm also a no. I mean, this is a Krampus here. G Rain's gonna have to get in the basket. Although he has a second one, so maybe we'll let him out and he can have a mediocre Christmas when it's all said and done. But, I'll crack the door open just a little bit and say it can be a little absurd to have to rely on you know, the officials and the equipment people, whoever the ball boy is, sort of getting the ball out and spotted and that sort of thing. I mean, we saw it two Thursdays ago did we have a name for that Chase Claypool thing where he points for the first down and everyone got super upset because he pointed for the first down and it was going to cost them the second? And then it ended up costing them like 8 seconds because Eric Kendricks just ran up and grabbed the ball and threw it away. And for some reason, all the officials were like, whoa, that's so weird that, like, Eric Kendricks went up there and suddenly the ball just ended up, like, way away from where it was going. But that ends up taking, like, 6 seconds off the clock. And that's just, you know, the officials have a lot on their plates. It's been a bit of a tough year, but that's just, like, one more thing that you're relying on them to very efficiently do at that point. And Sky Judge doesn't save you there. You just need to do it.
Sky Judge saves everybody from everything, Gary. Don't diminish Sky Judge. We can call it Celebrate Gate. I don't know. Whatever we would call the Chase Claypool thing. But no, Sky Judge fixes everything. Yeah.
Sky Judge is like, you know, in My Big Fat Greek Wedding where they use Windex for everything. Sky Judge is Windex. It just fixes everything. It's applicable to any situation. It just makes everything better. It's a cure-all. But that was a good movie reference.
I was just going to say, like, by the way, the gift to everybody, quite possibly Jenny's first ever movie reference years of podcasting with her. This is this feels unprecedented. Speak about unprecedented. This is fantastic. I love My Big Fat Greek Wedding, too.
All right, we have one more from G Rain to try and salvage his time on the show here. The second rule that I would look at, this being G Rain, is rewarding a team that causes a turnover inside the 25 by bringing the ball out to the 25-yard line. So what he's suggesting is basically, you know, you get an interception on the 5-yard line instead of trying to run it back. If you try to run it back, you just get it wherever you run it back. But it's the touchback, you know, type of approach to this on kickoffs where, you know, you intercept it on the 5-yard line, you can just give yourself up. And the ball will be spotted at the 25. This is new and interesting, and I'm not sure I have a take on it. I'm intrigued by it. I don't know if there's a reason for it, but I don't know if there's a reason against it.
Here's my pro. G Rain did not mention this, but it sounds like maybe a concern there for player health and safety, right? Mm-hmm. I think oftentimes if you make an interception, especially in the red zone, it's a lot of those passes where it's going to be a cornerback kind of breaking on a route, like, you know, like an in-breaking route or an out-breaking route and having room to run or, you know, something like that. And so I think it does avoid some of the crackback blocking that we've seen, like, is fairly prevalent. And no matter how many times refs flag that, that's just the favorite moment for football players to be able to run backwards and just knock somebody out. And it's not a great thing. But I think doing that, rewarding that, does eliminate that. I will offer a fun sort of suggestion there, but I think that the player should have to work for it a little bit. The player can punt the ball, so if you intercept it, let's move it inside the 10, and if you cause a turnover inside the 10-yard line, you punt the ball. Like, say Jenny's the cornerback, she intercepts the pass inside the 10, and then just winds up and kicks it, and wherever that kick ends up, that's where you get the ball. So sort of like combine, bring rugby into the fold, force a player who is not positionally able to kick the ball, and I think we're going to have some good moments.
All right. That is very interesting, Connor. I like the health and safety point. I was thinking that as well. You kind of eliminate some of the chaos of returns that mm-hmm. can create unsafe situations. So on that from that standpoint, I think it's a good thing. The one question I have here is, how would your awareness of where you are in the field factor into this? And I guess to some degree that is always a factor. Let's say you make the play in the end zone, you have to decide whether to take the ball out of the end zone or not. So I guess it's just sort of shifting that calculation that you have to make. But it does present an interesting, you know, decision if you're at the 20-yard line or you're at the 15 or the 10 or the 24, right? I don't know. It just seems like there might be an array of different strategical decisions you would have to make in a split second, which would require some extra coaching. But I'm always in favor of things that introduce new strategical considerations into the game. So maybe that could be a good thing.
I have a question for Connor. What if you go for your punt and, like, it's just, you know, whatever. You think you're kind of in space and you start to punt it and you, like, get grabbed and so the ball ends up, you swing and miss or something like that. Is it now a free ball again?
Yeah. So
I like that.
If you're deciding to be an asshole and trying to punt it, then, you know, that's on you too, you know? So it's like, it's really introducing an extra element to the game, you know? And I like the idea of Pro Football Focus grading, like, Patrick Peterson's punting. I enjoy that thoroughly, and I would like to, you know, everything comes back to my preferences, obviously, but, you know, to be able to, at the end of the season, rank the best non-punting punters, the best non-punter punters in the NFL, I just would find great joy in that.
I like the fact that people would then, like, argue over Madden ratings in punting for every player in the league. And I appreciate the fact that we started at, you know, player safety with this, and now we're at just guys doing unfamiliar,
around, like, smashing each other while they're
unfamiliar
punting.
Unfamiliar emotions, leaving them prone and just getting, I mean, can you rough the person? It's going to create a whole mess, which I guess is kind of what we're going for anyway. But I'm open to this.
I'm open to it.
Yeah, I think enough that we would, Crumpus is letting G-Rain out of the basket, out of the hamper, out of the clothes hamper. And
one of the things that I like about our show is that we're, like, we say things that are so wrong, but our audience is very nice. Like, there's not, like, I think our audience is to the right size. We're, like, just kind of mostly our, you know, well, like, a large group of friends, like a high school basketball stadium full of friends. But, like, and everyone's just like, hey, just wanted to let you know, like, during the podcast, you said, like, this, but it was completely wrong. Hope you have a good day. And, like, you know, I just can't wait for someone to be like, hey, like, Crumpus doesn't put children in a clothes basket. That must have just been something you saw online. Have a great day. You know, I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, how else would Crumpus do his laundry? He already has the hamper. The kids go in it. I'll find it. I saw the illustration a couple of years ago. I'll find it somewhere. But yeah, that's what he does. Okay, this next one is coming from Owen Egan. And this is something that the XFL put in. I believe no one ever attempted this in the XFL, but the three-point conversion. And correct me if I'm wrong, and it's really sad that I'm wrong because Jenny just gave me these notes before the show. But in the XFL, you could go for 1 point from the 2-yard line, for 2 points from the 5-yard line, or for 3 points from the 10-yard line. And I guess in the NFL, you know, we keep the PAT for one and the 2-yarder for two. And I think the math generally works out in that, right? You want the PAT. I mean, if anything, I'd move the PAT back to the original line and just make it near automatic again, because you want that to be, you know, if you're doing the math, you want, like, the 1 point to be almost completely automatic. You want the 2 point to be a 50-50 proposition. You want the 3 point to be a 1-3 proposition, which probably would be around, like, the 10-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this. I think this is a fun idea. Again, it introduces an extra layer of strategy that coaches have to consider. Going for three from the 10 is probably something you would only do if you had to, because the chances of getting in from the 10-yard line are a lot smaller. I mean, we heard Bill Belichick talk about this with his decision to kick the field goal in the Colts game. And because it was fourth and goal from the 7, they kicked the field goal instead of going for the touchdown. So I think going for it from the 10 would be if you're trying to close a deficit. But then it does allow for the fact that teams can come back. Like, it creates a more exciting game because you have the ability to score 9 points on any touchdown. And so our understanding of what a two-score game is changes. And so I really like this.
Anything that would allow for a beat reporter to have to ask, like, an angry Mike Zimmer on a regular basis why he doesn't go for three would be just such a treat for me. You know what I mean? Or, like, I mean, Jenny, we both covered Tom Coughlin. Like, can you imagine just, like, every single Monday being like, Tom, you know, you were down by whatever, you know, you didn't think about going for three there, and just watching their, like, old heads explode out of, like, you know, anger that the game is changing and everything. I just, that would be really special to me. I would really like that.
Does it bother you that a 9-point lead would now be a one possession game? Like, that, no. That math goes out the window.
No, because it should be. Like, I think it's silly that, like, I don't know. You either have to do one or the other, right? You have to fix the onside kick to make it, like, closer than a 1 in 10,000 proposition. And then, or you have to allow for a bigger point swing. And I think that one of those two things needs to be tweaked, because otherwise, I mean, I guess the NFL has its cake and eats it too because of the, you know, the increase in the widespread nature of gambling at this point. People are always going to watch until the end of the game because they have a vested interest. But you know, I'm thinking about people like me, and I would just like, who doesn't gamble, and I would just like games to be closer and more interesting at the end.
Also, getting 9 points is really hard still. I mean, that's the right. Other thing that right. I would say is that it's still unlikely. You're probably only going to do it if you have to, or there's some extreme mismatch against the opponent. So it's still a pretty high bar to clear.
Okay. All right.
Gary's not convinced.
Just an update here, by the way, Gary, that Krumpus does, it's a laundry basket. You're not wrong. Like,
yeah,
Krumpus does,
right?
it's like a wicker laundry basket that he's carrying children around in.
I mean, I really thought you were wrong, or maybe I was just hoping you were wrong.
I was certain he was wrong.
Don't know what's going on here, but certainly. Okay.
No, it's, and to be honest, I spent most of this show looking for pictures of Krumpus online here so that I could... so that I could win this argument at some point. But,
so when Gary says, how do you feel about one score being 9 points? He's just really asking the question so we can go back to Googling and Connor and I can debate it. And then he'll just chime back in later while he's looking at Krumpus photos.
Guys, be as expansive as you want with your answers. No, I think a neat thing is to say, like, if you have a single digit point lead, like, it's still a game. Get to 10. Make it a 10-point game. Put it away. There you go. I do want to throw in just real quick the old, I mentioned the old, you know, short extra point, the old, what was it, like a 19-yard kick that it used to be, and the argument was always, well, you can't have a play that, you know, gets converted 98% of the time. People, you know, there's no excitement. People won't watch that. But I don't know about you guys, and I don't know about our listeners, but unless it's like the end of a game where it's like the game winning / tying extra point, I can't really remember actually paying attention to an extra point since they moved it back. It just misses every once in a while. And then you're like, oh, they only have 6. Okay.
Yeah, it's like you just turn around and you're like, huh, like they, you know, I must have missed something. But I would say the only times that I've ever religiously watched extra points were, remember, it was like probably 8 years ago when Rob Gronkowski like broke his arm on an extra point, and everyone was like, why? I kept asking Bill Belichick why Rob Gronkowski was in blocking on extra points. And then I think I like went back and watched like a billion Patriots extra points. And then also didn't Nick Saban do something really weird with his holders? Like, they were like backup quarterbacks, and his backup quarterback got hurt on an extra point. He didn't use punters. He used quarterbacks always because he wanted the ever-present potential of a fake. But then, like, someone got run over and then hurt, and so there was, like, an issue there. So I think that there's those are the only two times I've ever in my life paid attention to an extra point.
Ah, I thought you were going to say to keep tabs on Michael Badgley.
He's missed some extra points this year, by the by.
Oh, he was having a great year, but he missed one the other day. Saturday night, national game. Not good.
Mm-mm.
Real X Factor could go positive or negative. That's what makes him such an X Factor.
Still trying to win that one, Gary.
This next one is coming from, we're going to make this rapid fire. This is coming from Michael Schutz. He claims it's pronounced Schutz. I'll play your game, Schutz, because you've written into the show before, but it's not spelled that way. We both know that. But he is putting forth a series of CFL adjustments, and he is basically applying to be our Canadian correspondent for the show, which is not an open position, and we will put your resume on the pile, I suppose, the one piece of paper pile. But Michael Schutz, I'll do this rapid fire, and people can just shout out their answers. First one, unlimited backfield motion.
Yes.
I would say yes, except for the player safety concern, where, you know, you can run full speed up to the line of scrimmage, and that leads to larger collisions down the field.
Okay. I'm going no on this one. So I guess we'll have to table it for next year's faux competition committee meeting and decide whether we're going to. I think it's too much chaos. I think we have enough offensive advantages, and it's time to do the defense a couple of favors at this point. And I will do that favor by canceling out this this rule in this exercise that will affect no one. Removing the number of sorry. 3, 2, 1. Removing one down from the number of tries you get to get a first down. So we're talking three downs here going forward.
No.
No. Why?
No. Sorry, what? Schutz.
Does the CFL only have three downs?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I think
as
so.
A resident CFL expert, until we hire our pal Mike Schutz.
I was going to say, maybe we do need Schutz.
Yeah.
Get out of here, Schutz. Three downs to Canadian football.
Three downs in the CFL. I just opened the tab right next to my Krumpus wicker basket picture, so that is confirmed now. Next one is, goalposts from the back of the end zone to the front.
No.
Definitely no. Again, because of the player safety concern. I always wonder why there aren't more collisions.
I have a quick funny story about this. Jenny and I used to work at a newspaper, and there was a columnist that contributed to the paper on a semi-regular basis as he neared his 100th birthday. And he was like a legendary columnist, like in the 30s, 40s, like in that 50s, in that era. And submitted a column. I remember working there at the night desk arguing that they should push the goalpost to the back of the end zone. And everyone was looking around like, that happened in 1970.
Wow. Wow.
They're like, we're just going to, like, the whole column wasn't about that, but it was just like, and another thing, they need to move this goalpost back. And everyone was like, that happened such a long time ago.
Hmm.
Incredible story, Connor. Incredible.
Yes.
Well, why can't we just take a... Why can't we just have, like, a... Because the back of the end zone goalpost still has some sort of threat here. Like, they raise the net to catch the ball. Why can't you just push that netting up to the back of the end zone and just have... You know, you have guys kicking into a net that has, like... You know, whatever. The posts are there, and we can look at... See whether it went through those posts or not.
It could come out of the stands, right? like it could be in the stands and then it could like arch out kind of like a tree over like a pond that's trying to stretch for sun and then go up. Like it could go out and then up out from like one of those tunnels that doesn't even need to be there and then up. So that that way it's not even, then there's almost no way you could run into it. If that's the concern, I don't know if that's the issue.
I think we need an engineer to put this together for us. I'm just saying drop a giant net instead of behind the goalpost. It is the goalpost. You just need to push the netting out a little bit. I don't know. All right, last one from Shoots here. The immediate implementation of the rouge, which yes. Of course is the one pointer, the kick it out of the punt it out of the back of the end zone.
I love this. And I think that there is perennial debate on if the CFL should continue to keep the rouge, but the people who are in favor of it are very in favor of it because it basically rewards you for moving the ball downfield close enough that you could at least kick the ball into the end zone. So you get something for a drive rather than, you know, marching cross midfield and then the drive stalls, you're out of field goal range and you get nothing. At least with the rouge, you get 1 point.
So rouge is if you punt the ball into the end zone, it has to like stay there?
I think the other team can't return it. I think that's the idea.
It has to go out the back.
Out the back, yeah.
Oh, it has to go out the back of the end
yeah.
zone. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's my tweak on this. Each end zone should have circles on both sides, like targets, and then you have to punt the ball into the circle and land it there, like almost like horseshoes, like land it in the circle, and then you get your point.
Wow.
But just
okay.
blasting it out of the back of the end zone doesn't impress me.
Okay. Oh, apparently if they just can't get the ball out of the end zone, that's also a point. But I would like to see this just because of the number of times the Vikings would have the ball like at the 8-yard line. And instead of coming out, you know, trailing by one, instead of coming out and kicking the game winning field goal, they'll just play for one in overtime and just send Jordan Berry out to just blast one 40 rows up so that Mike Zimmer doesn't have to sweat out the another kick here.
Amazing.
Poor Mike Zimmer.
Zimmer's a good coach. He just, I don't know, I would be a little bit scarred by my punter and maybe quarterback play, too, at this point. It's been 100%. A while. All right, so Shoots gets a delay on unlimited backfield motion. We do not go to three downs. Goalposts stay in the back and maybe get tweaked, but certainly not what Michael is suggesting here, but we will bring in the rouge to spice things up here and make some old school coaches a little happier that they can just play for 1 point at a time instead of three or six.
Finally, Jason Garrett gets an avenue back into the NFL.
All right, this next one is from Uncle Phil, and boy, I like this one. Fumble out of the back of the end zone, which every time it happens, it becomes a huge just cry for change across all of football Twitter. It hasn't happened in a while, so we haven't talked about this since I feel like last January when it happened to, was it Rashard Higgins who fumbled in the AFC divisional round? Daniel Sorensen knocked it out. But the fumble out of the back of the end zone, the offense retains possession, but it is first and goal from the 15. And I like that a lot.
Okay, so all right, I could do that. If you move it back to the, I'm not going to try to be pedantic here, but like anything more than 15, like even if you said 17, I'd be okay with that. But like 20, you know, first okay. and goal from the 20.
Okay, yeah, I could get down with that too because it's similar to one of the proposals that you mentioned last week, Gary. You're basically lengthening the distance you need to go for a first down. So yeah, first and goal from the 15 seems fair. You get some penalty, but not the kind of game-changing penalty that the fumble out the back of the end zone has been.
Yes, it's a headache, but you're not giving the defense this huge reward for, you know, a ball they didn't recover when it was all said and done.
Exactly.
And this one is crazy. I have not heard this one before. I have heard the reverse touchback where you bring it back to the 20 and go from there, but I've not heard the, you know, get it at the 15, but you have to go score a touchdown now.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. Like being able to manipulate also the down and distance, right? Not just where the ball is at.
Mm-hmm.
Be pretty sweet if Uncle Phil was like Falcons CEO Rich McKay, just like trying to drop competition committee intel into the Weakside podcast, you know?
We like
let's
it. Get,
let's go.
It Uncle is. Phil. I mean, this Twitter account is, what is it? It's at XFYHNBVCX, so... Could be a burner account. That's a McKay burner account if there ever was one.
There's a 0% chance somebody willingly signed up to use those letters as.
Oh, man. You know, I actually oftentimes use my name backwards for like random usernames like Enedge, YNNEJ. I like started doing it in high school as a joke. And so I don't know. Maybe this is some, you know, concoction of the letters in his name.
What is this spell in Roman numerals? I don't know.
It's definitely like when you learn to spell like bad words on the calculator. Like, you know, this is what we're going to end up with.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, that actually does it for the reader ones. One rule that we get asked about quite a bit, though, that we didn't touch on last week, is the spot and choose, the Ravens champion cause here to do overtime with the spot and choose. And I'll open the door. I don't feel really strongly about it, but I like how creative it is, and I like the amount of decision-making that needs to go into this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's the proposal where one team picks at what yard line you start play from, and then the other team picks whether they would play offense or defense. So it basically gives both teams a choice, and it attempts to level the playing field. I think it's really interesting. They propose two versions of this. One would be sudden death, and the other would be you'd play a full 7.5 minute period, and whoever finishes with more points wins. I think it's creative because we haven't come up with an overtime that has really leveled the playing field. There's always an advantage to the team that gets the ball first. And I think this offers, again, like another strategic consideration. It's, you know, you can factor in a lot of things, what your team's strength is, depending on if it's sudden death or the other version, there's different considerations there. So I really liked it and wish it had gotten more traction.
Yeah, that was one that I got excited about. And, you know, you just hope that, because I remember reading a few people who are crunching the numbers, and it's like, obviously, if you, obviously, like, this would be the yard line that you choose to be X. And, like, that was just kind of like the average, right? It would be, like, somewhere around, like, 33 or whatever it was that you would want your opponent to have the ball at. And so, as long as it didn't get, like, homogenized, like onside kicks have become or something like that, I'm totally down with that. Because, like you said, Jenny, I mean, these coaches are, you know, at times, like, I mean, obviously stretched very thin, but, like, I think should be challenged a little bit more. Like, you know, make them answer a trivia question or something like that. And, like, you know, if you can answer, like, if you can point out, like, different ancient Mesopotamian city-states on a current world map, you get, like, instead of a coin flip, it's, like, a three-sided dice, and you get two of the three sides or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and I think the idea also behind this was that, I believe the Ravens said that in the current overtime format, it's a 58-42 win percentage imbalance in favor of the receiving team. So the attempt with this was to kind of level the playing field and, yeah, correct for the fact that the coin toss, the winner of the coin toss, gets a large advantage.
That's how you know you have a smart organization, when, like, you're perpetually, like, winning division titles and proposing really smart rule changes. And, like, if you're like the Texans, you got to be like, God, will these nerds just shut up? You know, it's like when the kid in the front of the class is like engaging in robust discussion with the professor, and you're just like, you have it all already, you have it all, you know. But the Ravens, good for them, smart football.
Is it the draft yet?
Also, they're perpetually in favor of Sky Judge, which, you know.
Yeah, Sky Judge.
Yeah.
Sky Judge.
And, you know, the other thing with this is it would make absolute superstars out of your analytics guys. You know, we talk about, you know, we know offense coordinators and defense coordinators are valuable. Offensive line coaches are very valuable. But you would have to have a great analytics guy on your sideline for when this comes up in the postseason. And quite frankly, you also have someone to like point at if it goes horribly wrong. If you said I want Patrick Mahomes, or you said like 12-yard line and the Chiefs said sure, we'll throw Mahomes out there and he drives for the game-winning touchdown, now you have someone to point at and say like, oh, that guy did it. The MMQB NFL podcast is Jenny Brentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royson. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, and Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.